Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Dr. Diana Greene Foster is a professor at the University of California, San Francisco, and the leader of the Turnaway Study, a nationwide project which spends years following women who sought an abortion. The study examines the long-term effects of either having an abortion or being turned away. Her book, based on her research, The Turnaway Study, 10 Years, 1,000 Women, and the Consequences of Having or Being Denied an Abortion, is published by Scribner. The main finding of the Turnaway Study is that receiving an abortion does not harm the health and well-being of women, but in fact being denied an abortion results in worse financial, health, and family outcomes. Dr. Diana Greene Foster will be the speaker at this year's Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood Leadership Luncheon on Thursday, October 28th, from 12:30 to 1:30 p.m. The virtual event is open to the public, requires registration, and will be moderated by Dr. Dorcia Pliers. Once again, the study and the book are entitled The Turnaway Study, and Dr. Diana Greene Foster joins us now. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me to your show, Sarah.
It's my pleasure. Before we discuss the results of the study, could you set up the parameters for us? Make sure we know where you started with this.
Sure. We started the study in about 2007, when the idea that abortion hurts women was common and even used as a justification for restricting access to abortion. So we needed to know, what are the consequences for women of having abortions versus being denied? Because if you restrict access to abortion, that's what will happen, is people won't have access anymore. And so we studied people who presented for abortion just under a clinic's gestational limit and just over a clinic's gestational limit and were turned away. And we did that at 30 facilities across the country. So we recruited a sample of people who didn't get the abortion they wanted and those that were similar but did get their abortions. And it was enabled us to look at what are the health consequences of getting an abortion versus not getting an abortion.
And how were the facilities and the individuals selected?
So we picked the facilities for having the latest gestational limit within 150 miles. So the idea was that if you were too far in pregnancy for that clinic, there was no one nearby who could do an abortion later. And note that since we did this study, many states have further lowered the maximum gestation that people can go to. Mm-hmm. And Texas currently is restricting people at 6 weeks. So this study would have been easier to do now because many more people are being turned away than they were back a decade ago.
What were some of the questions that the participants were asked on your biannual check-ins with them?
So we asked them a slew of standard measures for physical health, mental health, socioeconomic well-being, and then some measures that we designed, like asking people what their aspirations were for the future, asking them about the quality of their relationships. We also asked standardized measures about how their children were doing, because some of your listeners may know, and some may be surprised, that the majority of people who seek abortions are already parents. They've already had one or more children. So when someone, and often the reason people give for wanting an abortion is to take care of the kids they already have. So it was important to us to look at children's outcomes as well.
And what are some of the, let's start talking about the findings. What are some of the main results that you have unearthed here?
So the just to start with what we didn't find, mm-hmm. is we did not find mental health harm from receiving an abortion. People have a range of emotional responses, but the vast majority, over 95% of people, say that the abortion was the right decision for them. Where we do find differences between those who get an abortion and those who don't are in economic well-being. So people who are denied abortions are much more likely to say that they can't afford basic living expenses. We also saw big differences in physical health. So people who were denied an abortion, carried the pregnancy to term, delivered a baby, experienced the greater risk of continued pregnancy and childbirth, and that resulted in more severe complications from the end of pregnancy, as well as long-lasting physical health harm in terms of some kinds of chronic pain and hypertension. I think a lot of people don't understand the physical health the risks of pregnancy and childbirth, or they minimize it, but they are substantial, so much that two women in the study actually died following childbirth. It's much greater maternal mortality than we would have expected, but it's a little window into how risky it is to carry a pregnancy to term and give birth. The other areas where we found differences were in kind of life outcomes. So, for example, the children of women who are denied abortions, the children they already had at the time of the unwanted pregnancy, did worse in terms of economic well-being and child development, achieving developmental milestones. And then in terms of the women, and I call them women even though some trans men and non-binary people have abortions. In this study, it was just women.
Okay.
Their children, they were less likely to achieve aspirational plans for the coming year, including things like being in a high-quality relationship later and having a more intended pregnancy within the 5 years. So not being able to terminate this one unwanted pregnancy reduced their chances of having a more intended pregnancy under better circumstances later. It's a bunch of findings that either there were no differences or the differences showed that women who received their abortions were better off. And the ways in which women were better off when they were able to get their abortion exactly correlate to what they said their reasons for wanting an abortion were. When people are making that decision, whether to continue a pregnancy to term or have an abortion, they're understanding the consequences of having a pregnancy and birth. They understand that it's expensive, that it will derail other plans they might have. They understand that their romantic relationship with the man involved in the pregnancy might not be strong enough. Now they're making this decision carefully, and they're able to foresee the consequences.
One of the things in the study that I'd like you to discuss is relationships, the relationship findings with the people who sought and were denied or turned away for their abortion. They would be forced or it would be likely that the woman would have to stay involved with the man who parented the child. And that, of course, if they were seeking an abortion, might not be the desired outcome. Is that the case that women stay in bad relationships when they aren't able to terminate a pregnancy that was formed in the unhealthy relationship?
Yeah, that is an excellent question. And that's certainly, we expected that relationships would last longer if the pregnancy was carried to term than if it wasn't. And that's just not what we found. Women say that their relationship with the man involved in the pregnancy is poor, and often, about a third of the time, that's a reason for having an abortion, mm-hmm. one of their reasons. And we find that over time, there's no difference in the chance that the woman is still with the man involved, whether she had an abortion or a baby. And I think that's surprising because you think that having a child might keep people together, but these relationships were not good to start with, and over the long term, it doesn't actually keep people together. We do find, however, that people are more likely to have ongoing contact with the man involved, and that results in a continued exposure to violence. So in our study, about 5% of the women report abuse, physical abuse from the man involved in the pregnancy in the 6 months prior to pregnancy. And for women who got an abortion, that risk of violence goes down substantially and immediately. And for people who are denied, it's just level. It doesn't go down. It doesn't go up. And the reason is they're just continue to be exposed to that man, even if they're not in a romantic relationship. So it really shows that people, you know, understand that their relationship isn't good enough to support a child. And even having a child doesn't make that relationship persist.
Did you have any trouble recruiting people for the study, or were women generally willing to participate?
That's a good question. People are not generally willing to be called every 6 months for 5 years. Mm-hmm, you'd mm-hmm. be surprised to know. But it's no different for our study than for other studies. There are other longitudinal studies of people's health, and just not everybody signs up for it. In fact, we had about a third of the people that we told about the study actually agree to participate. And that could be a concern if people who agreed to participate were different from people who didn't agree. When we look at other studies, we find similar findings to ours, which reduces the concern that we've somehow selected people who are more comfortable talking about abortion or who are going to have better outcomes. And the other really important thing about the study is that the people who received abortions and those who were denied were extremely similar at baseline. And when their outcomes diverged, it was in ways that could be attributed to having the baby versus having an abortion. So I think it is true that not everyone participates in longitudinal studies, but in this case, we have evidence that we have a representative sample.
Part of the Turnaway study examines the mental health of women who were turned away and women who did receive their abortion. What were the mental health findings that were discovered in your research?
So what we found is that in the long term, there is no difference in depression symptoms or cases, in post-traumatic stress, in suicidality, between people who had abortions and people who were denied abortions. And you could say, oh, that's because both groups are doing badly, but that would be wrong. In fact, both groups improve over time. So we see that that there aren't mental health harms from abortion. And also in the long run, there aren't mental health harms from being denied an abortion. However, in the short run, less than a year, there's higher anxiety and lower self-esteem, lower life satisfaction among the people denied. And I think that's because they just sought an abortion. They don't feel ready to have a child. And learning that you're going to have a child, even though you don't feel like you're ready for it, causes some significant anxiety and questioning of one's life trajectory. But over time, they look over past 1 year, they look very similar to people who received an abortion. So emotionally, mental health-wise, people are resilient, but emotional resilience doesn't pay bills, and it doesn't make your body heal faster. So there are not long-term mental health harms, but there are long-term physical health harms and economic harms from being denied an abortion.
Recently, New York, in light of what's happening in Texas and over the country, new laws have been passed. Could you tell us about those laws and if you think that they are on the right path in New York? We'll start with New York.
It's an interesting thing. There have been thousands of laws passed about abortion in just the past 10, 20 years, and the vast majority of those restrict access. New York is really on the forefront of passing laws that actually protect people's access to abortion. And maybe it didn't seem like it was necessary with Roe versus Wade, which said, and a subsequent Supreme Court case, which said that people should be able to have control over whether they carry a pregnancy to term or have an abortion up to viability. But now Roe is under threat, and in response, states, especially New York, have passed laws which actually say our state law will codify Roe, will say that women should still have access to abortion, even if the federal government no longer protects it.
Who typically seeks a later term abortion? Although late, of course, is relative, it's the because sometimes it's still quite early in the first trimester when these deadlines are being set.
The vast majority of people who have abortions in the United States are in the first trimester, so within 13 weeks. It's something like over 90%. And why I think there's this assumption that if you're after that, you're sitting around twiddling your thumbs and you don't care. That is absolutely not correct. People try and get an abortion as fast as they can. And in many parts of the country, it's very difficult to access an abortion. It's expensive. There are few clinics. You have to drive long distances. And there are laws that, in fact, intentionally slow you down. There are waiting periods where people have to make multiple visits and wait days in between. But the biggest thing that actually results in people seeking abortion later or starts that snowball of logistical delays is people who don't realize they're pregnant. And you think, how could that happen? Well, it happens when people don't have pregnancy symptoms when they and in the Turnaway study, we actually looked at the data on this, and people who were using contraception were slower to detect that they were pregnant, which makes sense. They thought they had protected themselves from the risk, and so they didn't realize when they were pregnant. But some people also just don't have pregnancy symptoms. They spot during early pregnancy and they think those are periods. They just are lucky enough not to have all the nausea and tiredness and other symptoms, and which is great for a wanted pregnancy, but not having those symptoms can really delay people recognizing that they're pregnant. There's also one more set of people, which is people who got some sort of news during their pregnancy that made them change their minds. And that can be health news, relationship economic news, and fetal diagnoses. So people seek abortions later in pregnancy for a variety of reasons. And right now, our laws are not set up to help people have abortions faster. Our laws are entirely set up to slow people down.
Does your study account for whether or not the women who are seeking abortions typically support abortion rights, or would they find themselves in a situation where they need to address it, like in a vacuum in their own life? Do you know how most of the women approach
that? That is such an interesting question, and we did look at it. I think our society tells people that abortion is wrong and that it's irresponsible to have one. And so when people find themselves in a situation where they feel like they need one, they think, oh, well, mine's an exception. Other people might be irresponsible, but I am not. So therefore, I'm an exception. And not recognize that everybody who's making this decision is doing the best they can and weighing their responsibility and aspirations to try and make the best decisions. We do find about 1 in 5 people thought that abortion was morally wrong, but they may not feel that about their own abortion. They just may feel like in general it isn't a decision that should be taken lightly, and they know they didn't, but they're not extending that same understanding to other people.
You just used the phrase taking the decision lightly, a decision that could be taken lightly. I don't see a universe where anyone would make the decision lightly, even if they made it quickly. It seems like it's impossible to just make this choice willy-nilly. So did you find that to be the case, that it was that people typically felt they had considered all their options and landed here intelligently?
Yeah, I mean, about half the people said it was a hard decision and half people said it wasn't. But it not being a difficult decision doesn't mean you chose randomly. It means that it was obvious from all of your considerations what the right answer was for you.
Of course.
I think the best evidence that people are making a careful decision is that when they tell us their reasons for having an abortion, those reasons, economic reasons, desire to take care of their existing children, desire to pursue life goals like education and better job and more stable housing, wanting a better relationship with the man involved before having a child or finding a better relationship. All of these reasons that people give us are clearly shown in the outcomes of people who are denied, that being denied an abortion means that you will not have enough money for basic living needs. It will reduce your ability to take care of your existing children. It makes people scale back their aspirational plans. And yes, the relationship with the man involved is often not good enough to support a child. So I think that we when we look at the people's reasons and the outcomes for people who are denied, it's clear that people are making a careful decision. It's too bad that our popular discussion somehow acts like people are doing this carelessly when there's just no evidence that that is true.
Did any of the women who received their abortion regret getting it?
The vast majority of people who received an abortion said it was the right decision. Mm-hmm. There's a small minority, less than 5% initially, less than 1% 5 years out, who say that they wish they hadn't. And who is represented in that is disproportionately people who had a very hard time making the decision at the first onset. So that's not surprising. You know, if it was a difficult decision to make, maybe you're less sure of it years later as well. And it's why people should be given time to make that decision, and gestational limits that are passed actually prevent people from having the time they might need. But it also indicates that many people actually, when they are certain of their decision, they'll continue to feel certain of their decision over time.
How do you hope your research is used in the conversation going forward on abortion in the United States?
Yeah, this is unfortunately a time when the research is super relevant. The Supreme Court is considering a gestational ban at 15 weeks. And if that comes to pass, many people will be unable to get their abortion. And all negative consequences that we document for people who are denied abortions will come true for those people who are unable to get an abortion when they feel like they need one. So I would like for this whole debate to stop being about ideology and political gains of one political party versus another party, and just focus on the real people who are involved, their desire to have children later under better circumstances is important. And to force people to have pregnancies, care pregnancies at term when they're not ready, results in worse outcomes. I wish we could switch the conversation to focus more on the people involved.
Dr. Diana Green Foster is a professor at the University of California, San Francisco, and leader of the Turnaway Study. Her book is The Turnaway Study, 10 Years, 1,000 Women and the Consequences of Having or Being Denied an Abortion. It's published by Scribner. She will be the featured speaker at this year's Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood Leadership Luncheon on Thursday, October 28th from 12:30 to 1:30. The virtual event is open to the public and will be moderated by Dr. Dorcia Pliers. Dr. Diana Green Foster, thank you very much for your time today, and I hope that the event with Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood goes well.
Thank you so much, Sarah. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Dr. Diana Green Foster will be the speaker at this year's Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood Leadership Luncheon on Thursday, October 28th. To learn more, visit uhpp.org. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.